For KOSU News, I'm Michael Cross, and it's time once again for This Week in Oklahoma Politics with Republican political consultant Neva Hill. And sitting in for Ryan Kiesel is Oklahoma Policy Institute Executive Director David Blatt. Well, first off, on Tuesday, the president gave his seventh State of the Union address. David, let's start with you. What did you think of the speech?
Well, I think it was an opportunity for the president to both share some good news, as he said. We've turned a corner, and the nation as a whole is seeing strong economic growth, low unemployment. There have been successes on some of his top areas of priority, such as the Affordable Care Act. The exchanges are working this year, and people are signing up. I know we'll talk more about that. So I think that he was able to say that the State of the Union is strong, as presidents are wont to do, but also lay out a clear agenda for, as he called it, middle-class economics that would help boost wages, strong push for higher education with his plans for free community college education, talking about a tax cuts on the middle class and raising some taxes on upper-income folks. So I think he put forward a strong agenda. Obviously, it's going to be a tough sell in with the Republican Congress, but he laid out a vision that I think much of the American public would be supportive of.
Neva, not surprising, all of Oklahoma's congressional delegation opposed just about everything he said. Were you surprised by the opposition?
And not really, and I think here is the problem. I mean, the president, yes, we want to hear the president always in the State of the Union say that the nation is strong, and that certainly is always well received. But his willingness to compromise or find common ground clearly is still not there. And what we have is a president who is going after the top 1%, the rich, saying that he plans to raise $320 billion through new taxes and fees on the wealthy and big banks. And so what we have is, in essence, the president saying that he wants to help the middle class, but he wants to really have class warfare. I mean, in any way you want to slice or dice it. And I think it's unfortunate because there are many issues that this Congress has repeatedly kind of laid out the olive branch and said there are some issues that we can talk about and we could find some common ground on. So, you know, whether he's intractable, he certainly, after a very crushing election in just 2 months ago, I think we're seeing someone who was almost had a tone, as some said, of feeling very, very assertive and jocular and in command. But in many ways, I think it is just this, again, attitude of the executive branch by really executive fiat is going to snub the nose at the legislative branch and say, if I want to do something, I'm going to do it and defy them to try to change it.
Last week, we talked about a plan by Oklahoma Hospital Association to use Medicaid expansion money to help low-income uninsured people through Insure Oklahoma. Neva, since then, the governor has said no to this idea.
The governor continues to say no to the expansion of Insure Oklahoma or Medicaid expansion. I think the interesting twist in this, and David and I may have some agreement on this, is that what we, I think, are seeing is really some expansion of Medicaid through the Department of Mental Health and the Oklahoma Health Care Authority and some of the things that are now going on with these health homes that are being put in place that really is just another domino, I think, in an attempt to have managed care and really have many of the things in health care services in Oklahoma that Republicans certainly who are in control, I think, would be absolutely diametrically opposed to. So it's going to be interesting in this session to see if they really take hold of this and really start to figure out what's going on.
David, what do you think of this decision?
I think the governor will continue to say no until she says yes. And what we've seen in a number of states across the country is Republican governors and Republican legislatures finding ways to accept the federal dollars that are on the table. In Oklahoma's case, we're looking at billions of dollars over the next 10 years with a very small state contribution, much of which will be offset in savings when the state no longer has to cover the costs for mental health services and other services. So it's a great deal. It's a crucial deal, critical deal for rural hospitals and community health centers and other community providers. And what we're seeing in other states is a willingness both from state government and from the federal government to find ways to expand coverage without simply expanding traditional Medicaid. So in Arkansas, for example, they're using the federal dollars to subsidize private insurance. Elsewhere, there's roles for health savings accounts and other things. There are ways to come up with healthcare reform that may not be exactly what Democrats are proposing, but which would allow the way to bring federal funds into Oklahoma, shore up our healthcare system, and provide coverage for those at least 200,000 Oklahomans who are now going without, and it's a real drain on family economic security and on businesses and really on our whole economy.
And I think the key for the Republican lawmakers, it seems to be the sticking point, is back to the federal dollars and how long are they there. I mean, you know, many of these dollars, I mean, it is clear they're only there for 24 months, 2 years, and in some cases in some of these programs, you're looking at whether it's $50 million or whatever the figure that's being laid out there, that's another big budget hole to look at 2 years or 3 years down the road. So I think they've got to be very judicious and very careful how they approach this. They have to come up with some middle ground solution. I agree. I don't think this can be an intractable yes or no. I think they need to come to the table and work this thing through. And I hope that it comes early in the session rather than in the closing stretch when we make a lot of mistakes trying to run a bill too fast.
We've all seen that happen. Now, earlier this week, the leaders of the state Senate admitted teachers in the state need to be paid more. Senate President Pro Tem Brian Bingaman is raising concerns in the difference in pay between Oklahoma, which pays teachers on average $44,000 a year, and Texas, which pays $48,000. Now, the national average is $56,000. David, is there a chance teachers could finally see a pay raise this year?
Well, I think there's no question that we're seeing a real crisis in the teaching profession, that the number of teachers has been falling, that we've seen 7-8 years without a statutory pay raise for teachers, and we are seeing teachers leaving the profession. We're seeing young teachers being recruited to other states. We're just not paying a competitive wage. And with the cuts in state support for schools, we're seeing larger class sizes, fewer classes. So we're going to have to do something. The question is, how do we get it done? And when we're looking at a really tough budget outlook where you have last year's budget had $400 million in one-time funding that's not going to be there again. So we're projecting that next year's budget, we're starting off about $300 million below where we are. And there's a lot of budgetary needs that are piling up. The question is going to be, how do you find the money for a pay raise? I certainly don't question the sincerity of Pro Tem Bingaman or the Speaker or others that they'd like to do it. The question is going to be how to do it. I think they'll be looking at some kind of multi-year plan, which would phase in. But even then, making the numbers work, finding money for education without putting in place further cuts to healthcare, and while addressing other needs, this is going to be a real challenge. And they're going to have to be creative on what may be some revenue options they can look at.
Neva, how do we do this?
Well, I think they do have to deliver on the campaign promise. I mean, they all talked about the need to raise teacher pay, the governor, people out in the legislative races. So it is an issue. I think it will be, in some measure, they're trying to get a little ahead of the rally that's, I think, expected on March 30th or something, where the number already out there is 50,000. Whether it is anywhere near that, it well could be. And that will apply the people pressure to the problem. And I think it will give, hopefully, an opportunity for lawmakers to begin to look at some other areas where they can make cuts, not in healthcare and services that people expect the government to provide and are the critical services, but in some of these areas where there is. I mean, there's clearly room to make some changes, make some cuts, right-size government, as the governor likes to say. And I think that's where they'll have to move to see a pay increase for teachers. But it's one of those things, they can't just talk about it. They are going to have to deliver in some measure.
A survey of energy firms shows 20% plan to reduce spending, while a quarter plan significant employment cuts. Neva, we're talking about budgets here. At what point do state leaders and lawmakers need to be concerned?
Well, I mean, I think everyone already is concerned. I mean, you look at these forecasts, you look at the studies, and you see what the trends are. I think it is not total doom and gloom. I mean, many of these forecasts do say that while there'll be some behavioral adjustment, there'll be some changes in the first part of this year, that by the time we get to the third and fourth quarter, that it may be a little brighter picture, not necessarily rosy, but at least that we may see some trend back the other direction. So I think it is a case where you have to be, you have to be very upfront and very proactive. And I think having gone through the tough times and the bust before, no one wants to see that repeated.
David, what are you thinking about these numbers and the situation that might be happening for the budget in the state?
Well, when the State Board of Equalization met in December, they actually projected that there's going to be about $100 million in additional tax revenue this year. That was based on an average price during the upcoming fiscal year of $59 per barrel for oil. We have fallen considerably below that, but certainly there are some who expect that to rebound. So we don't have a budget projections that are based on oil being at $75 or $80 or $90. I do think, though, that it could be worse than was expected back in December. I think the latest news of 7,000 jobs being cut at Baker Hughes and others in the sector.
9,000 at Schlumberger, yeah. There's quite a few.
There's quite a few, and I think there is some surprise at really how quickly and how strongly the industry is reacting in terms of bracing themselves and laying off jobs. So it could get pretty bad here. It could get worse than was even expected in December, and that was hardly a rosy picture.
Oklahoma has an unemployment of 4.4. The Department of Commerce says there's jobs out there. Do you think these people can easily shift from the energy to these other industries?
There's going to be some opportunities, but if the oil prices stay low and the energy industry is in an extended slump, it's going to have repercussions across the economy, and there's going to be a lot of competition for the jobs that are out there.
Last week, the State Election Board released some interesting numbers on registered voters. For the first time in Oklahoma history, Republicans outnumbered Democrats. David, are you surprised by this?
Well, certainly that's a long-term trend that we've seen now for decades, where the number of Republicans has increased. I remember when I first moved to Oklahoma in the mid-1990s, I was teaching an undergraduate class at OSU, and it occurred to me that the students in my class, their grandparents likely registered Democrat and voted Democrat. Their parents likely continued to register Democrat but voted Republican, and the students themselves probably registered and voted Republican. Mm-hmm. I think we're now seeing registration with some of the older Democrats generation dying off. Now we're also seeing quite a few Democrats who are switching their registration because the action is happening in Republican primaries. We saw that in the fall with the primary campaign for state superintendent of instruction. Democrats said, well, they wanted to vote in the primary. So a number of things are combining. It's not a surprise, and it's unlikely that trend is going to change anytime soon. Eventually, it will likely see a rebalancing.
Well, now that's what I was wondering, Neva. They're just a tenth of a percentage off. Do you see this differential really growing much, or do you see it more kind of balancing out, staying closer to each other?
It's been a steady growth on the Republican side of the ledger, and I think David's right. I mean, you have many Democrats who have trended toward voting Republican. Certainly at the national level, we know in presidential campaigns, but that started to then trickle down to statewide races and local races. And so when you look at 44%, 44% still basically, it's very even. You've got that kind of inching up independent group, I think about 13% now based on these new studies. statistics that are out last week. So, I think it changes the political landscape a little, but really, I mean, I think what we're going to see is no radical change in really voting behavior on the part of Oklahomans. They tend to be, as we've always kind of used the term, they are a conservative voting bloc. And I think until there's some real diametric shift in party, kind of party alignment and party platform and the way that they approach trying to appeal to the voter, that there's not going to be any real significant changes.
There we go. Thank you very much. David and Neva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of KOSU, its staff, or management.